Iran's leader says some hostilities towards the Islamic Republic are due to the very nature of the Islamic establishment, and others are over political issues such as Palestine. Israel launches airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip amid heightened tensions following the regime's deadly raid on the occupied West Bank. Palestinians say the Israeli raid on Nablus was part of the regime's systematic terrorism, saying the right response is resistance. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says some bear animosity towards the Islamic Republic over its political stance, such as the question of Palestine. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, however, that some hostilities are due to the very nature of the Islamic establishment. He said that the Islamic Republic is opposed to those who believe in the West's policy of separating religion from social issues. He added that Iran is also against the liberal democracy advocates who plan to loot the riches of the world in the name of freedom and democracy. The leader noted that Iran has thwarted such schemes by creating a nexus between democracy, freedom, and religion. Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei urged the caution against the enemy's plots of striking despair into the hearts of people. The leader further hailed the huge turnout of the people in nationwide rallies marking the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Palestinian mourners have held a massive funeral procession for the victims of the latest Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. At least 11 Palestinians, including a 14-year-old boy and a 66-year-old man, were killed in the attack. Over 100 others were injured, several of them critically. Palestinian officials have requested an emergency session of the UN Security Council on the Israeli massacre in Nablus. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement says two of its commanders are among those killed. The Israeli regime has intensified crackdown on Nablus and the nearby city of Jenin since the inauguration of the regime's far-right cabinet by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. On Thursday, a 30-year-old Palestinian youth identified as Muhammad Nabi Fawzi Abu Sabah succumbed to the injuries that he suffered during a recent Israeli raid on a refugee camp in Jenin. More than 60 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces across the West Bank so far this year. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kendall, says that a general strike has been declared across the occupied West Bank following the Israeli regime's bloodshed there.
Today, a general strike has been declared across the occupied West Bank with no schools, transportation as well, to express Palestinians' anger over the Israeli crimes that had been committed and continue to be committed by the Israeli forces against the Palestinians. The different Palestinian resistance groups have slammed the Israeli crimes and the killing of 11 Palestinians in Nablus and vowed that they would respond and that Palestinians will always be adherent to their choice of resistance, because in response to these Israeli massacres and the Israeli aggression, Palestinians have nothing but to respond, and anything that would happen would be a natural response to the pain, to the crimes being committed by the Israeli forces.
The Israeli military has carried out airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip a day after the killing of nearly a dozen Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. There were no immediate reports of casualties and damage from the airstrikes. Our correspondent, Ashraf Shannon, has filed this report.
Israeli fighter jets attacked two areas in the Gaza Strip between 5:30 and 6 a.m. This morning. The first location that was hit by the Israeli rockets was a Hamas training center in the west of Gaza City near the coastline. And the other one was in also a Hamas security post in Al Buraid refugee camp in the center of the Gaza Strip. The Israeli regime claims that the airstrikes were retaliation for what they said rockets that were fired from the Gaza Strip. Palestinian resistance groups, mainly Hamas's military wing, the Azim Qassam Brigades, retaliated to the airstrikes and the presence of Israeli fighter jets by firing heavy machine gun fire towards the Israeli fighter jets. While earlier, Palestinian resistance factions, mainly Hamas and the Islamic Jihad, condemned the carnage in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus that claimed the lives of around a dozen Palestinians. The spokesman of the Azim Qassam Brigades, the Hamas military wing, Abu Ubaida, said yesterday that the Palestinian resistance factions will retaliate and will not remain silent.
Iran's foreign minister has strongly condemned the latest Israeli massacre of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus.
The Zionist regime is facing multifaceted crises from within, and Netanyahu's cabinet is falling apart. Israel has resorted to bloodshed to cover up these crises, but what was witnessed in Nablus proved that resistance is not limited to Gaza alone. The entire West Bank has now turned into an epicenter of resistance against the occupying regime.
Amir Abdullahian's remarks came as condemnations are pouring in over the Israeli bloodshed of Palestinians. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says the cruel targeting of civilians confirms that the occupying regime can only be deterred by the weapon of resistance fighters. In a message, the Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Shtayyeh branded the Nablus carnage as the Israeli regime's systematic terrorism. Separately, resistance movement Hamas denounced the extrajudicial killing of Palestinians, saying that retaliatory attacks would be the only response to Israel. Palestinian activist and journalist Wafa Al-Udaini gave us her perspective on the deadly Israeli incursion into the occupied West Bank.
What is happening in Nablus is a genocide, and the Israeli occupation is acting in a way, this brutality, because they are aided by the whole world, and indeed they mean to crack down the resistance in the occupied West Bank. But they think that by acting this way, they are uprooting the resistance. But indeed, the resistance is deep in our heart, in Palestinian heart, because not because we like to kill the people and so on. No, because we are being subject to daily oppression by the occupation forces. In the West Bank, they think that they are going by this crackdown. They are destroying or uprooting the resistance and killing the whole freedom fighters. But indeed, by keeping oppressing the Palestinians in the West Bank, of course the resistance will grow up more and more, by the time. And indeed, this time, actually, when we have the Israeli new extremist government, actually they act in a very savage way, in a very brutality way. Indeed, they are just kill the people, and they think that they are above the law. And nobody held them accountability for their crimes and their genocide and their oppression against the Palestinian people.
Israeli forces have opened fire on a Palestinian woman near the settlement of Mali Adumim, southeast of occupied Al-Quds. According to eyewitnesses, a woman was shot in the leg while she was approaching the troopers. She has been taken into custody for an alleged stabbing attempt. Reports say that the woman is in moderate condition, but her identity remains unknown. The Israeli regime has intensified crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied territories following the formation of a far-right cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. More than 60 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank alone since the turn of the year. Hundreds of Palestinians have also been languishing in Israeli jails for years without any charge or trial. And in Tehran, a funeral procession has been held for the former Palestinian ambassador to Iran who passed away on Monday at the age of 85. Salah al-Zawawi was the longest-serving foreign diplomat in Iran representing Palestine for over four decades. I personally attended the ceremony.
The cortege makes its way down the street into Behesht-e Zahra Cemetery in Tehran. Mourners looking on solemnly as the casket is brought to the burial ground for the funeral prayers to be performed. Right before the body of Salah al-Zawawi, the former Palestinian ambassador to Iran, is laid to rest. Representatives from foreign missions in Tehran, as well as a group of government officials and pro-Palestinian NGO and human rights activists, it was his wish to be buried in Iran, and the chief mourner, his daughter Salam al-Zawawi, who replaced him as a Palestinian ambassador last year, made a powerful statement.
Jerusalem al-Quds will be free. This is what my father truly believed, and he dedicated his life to fighting against the occupiers of our land. As his final wish, he called on all Muslims around the world to help free Jerusalem al-Quds.
Al-Zawawi served as a Palestinian ambassador to Tehran for 42 years, from 1980 to 2022. He retired in February last year due to his failing health. He was the second Palestinian envoy to Iran after the revolution, succeeding Hani al-Hassan. As the longest-serving foreign diplomat in the Islamic Republic, he earned the title Muqaddam al-Sufara, which means the senior-most foreign diplomat.
He was a committed diplomat and truly believed in the unity of all Palestinians. He worked very hard to make that happen. Al-Zawawi would attend every single event where there was a possibility of discussing the situation of Palestine and shedding light on the atrocities of the Zionist regime. During his tenure in Tehran, he also played an important role as diplomat. We have lost a very good friend.
During his years-long battle against the Zionist occupiers of Palestine and several decades of diplomatic activities in Iran, Zawawi always fought to safeguard the rights of oppressed Palestinians and keep the Palestinian cause alive.
According to all of our agreements, we are completely against normalizing ties with Israel. This is something that Mr. al-Zawawi stood up for. He made a lot of speeches discussing why it's absolutely wrong to normalize ties with Israeli occupiers of our land.
The late Salah al-Zawawi was like a father to all of us in the resistance front. He dedicated his life to uniting Palestinians and fighting for the freedom of our land. He wanted every single inch of Palestine to be free. May he rest in peace.
I met Mr. al-Zawawi 3 years ago when I first arrived in Tehran to serve as Syria's ambassador. But I knew him long before that. In Syria, he was a very well-known figure because of his political views and speeches. Not only did he advocate Palestinian rights, but he also played an important role in strengthening the ties of Arab countries.
To many people, Salah al-Zawawi was an icon, a role model. But to his family, he was a loving father and grandfather, too.
My grandfather was not just a leader and an ambassador. He wasn't just great at his job. He was a great person at home with his family. He was a great father, he was a great grandfather, and he was a great friend. He will be missed because, honestly, his presence was such a great influence for all of us. He was lovely, he was funny, he was motivational, and he was strong.
Throughout his career, Salah al-Zawawi took major steps to shed light on the Israeli occupation of Palestine, efforts that, according to him, had eventually made a point with the occupiers.
It is very clear to them that the people of Palestine will never forget its land. Not in 1948, and in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, and 1948, we will never forget our land.
This is probably why Palestinians of all backgrounds take his loss heavily.
Salah al-Zawawi served as a Palestinian ambassador to Tehran for more than four decades. He was the second Palestinian ambassador since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. He was also among the founding members of the Fatah movement. He will always be remembered as an influential figure in the fight against Israeli occupation. Gisum Shah Ahmadi, Tehran.
On the eve of the first anniversary of the Ukraine war, the Russian President Vladimir Putin has hailed the forces fighting in Kiev and promised to boost his country's defense capabilities. In a video addressed to mark the annual public holiday, Putin said Russia needs a modernized army, navy, and a guarantee to guarantee its sovereign security. He also vowed to continue strengthening the army with advanced weapons, including drones and artillery, as well as reconnaissance and communication equipment. He added that Russia would also pay increased attention to boosting its nuclear forces and deploying a new intercontinental ballistic missile. In September last year, Putin had issued similar statements in what he called a strengthening the country's defense capabilities by mobilizing 300,000 reservists to Ukraine. The move was seen as a significant escalation of Russia's efforts in what Putin has called a special military operation across the border.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
Official statistics have revealed that all sectors of the EU's economy recorded a spike in defaults last year. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, the number of insolvencies among EU businesses surged to the highest level during the final 3 months of 2022 since records began in 2015, as the bloc teeters on the edge of a recession, a statistics agency Eurostat reported recently. Defaults jumped by 26.8% compared to the previous quarter, while levels of business registration decreased by 0.2% in the same period last year. Eurostat said the trend persisted throughout the year, adding that the number of bankruptcy declarations increased during all four quarters of 2022. The agency also noted that all areas of economic activity were affected. The report said, looking specifically at bankruptcies by activity, all sectors registered increases in the number of bankruptcies in the fourth quarter of 2022 compared with the previous quarter. The severe energy crunch and an ensuing cost of living crisis contributed to a surge of insolvencies across the EU. The sectors with the highest levels of defaults were transportation and storage, which saw a 72.2% surge, and accommodation and food services with a 39.4% rise. Education, health, and social activities saw a 29.5% increase. Compared with the pre-pandemic fourth quarter of 2019, the number of bankruptcy declarations in the last 3 months of 2022 was higher in the majority of sectors of the economy, according to Eurostat. Accommodation and food services were hit the hardest in the final 3 months of 2022 compared to the same period of 2019, with a 97.7% increase in insolvencies among EU businesses. Meanwhile, real earnings in Germany decreased by an average of 4.1% in 2022 compared with a year earlier, according to preliminary data from the statistics agency D-Statist released recently. A drop in real earnings refers to a situation where wage increases are unable to keep up with rising inflation, thus reducing spending power. Last year was the third consecutive year in which real wages declined in Germany. The statist wrote, noting that consumer prices jumped 7.9% last year. High inflation has led to the largest loss in real earnings for employees since the beginning of the time series in 2008. Meanwhile, nominal earnings in the country increased by only 3.4% on average in 2022. This figure takes into account the gross monthly earnings of employees, including extra payments, these studies explained. Europe's largest economy suffered from record inflation last year due to a surge in energy prices brought about by the drop in deliveries from Russia amid Ukraine-related sanctions. Issues with pipeline maintenance and then the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines further exacerbated the tight supplies. Last month, Economy Minister Robert Habeck said the German economy would avoid a sharp decline but is set to enter a technical recession. According to Bloomberg, the number of bankruptcies in Sweden also surged to the highest level in at least a decade in January, amid growing pressure on construction companies from an ongoing housing market crunch, Bloomberg reported recently. According to the media outlet citing credit reference agency UC, the number of bankruptcy filings rose to 622, marking a 47% increase from a year earlier. Sweden has been struggling with its worst housing price slump in 3 decades. The situation has contributed to a surge in defaults in construction sector, with 130 builders filing for bankruptcy last month. Home prices have reportedly fallen by 16% from a peak in the first quarter of last year, with economists projecting the slide to continue. According to Bloomberg, UC economist Johanna Blom said, during fall, we saw bankruptcies in consumer-facing businesses such as retail, hotels, and restaurants in Sweden. Now we see that the largest increase is happening in sectors that are closely connected to industry and longer-term investments. A severe slump in Sweden's real estate sector has damaged the Nordic region's largest economy. According to estimates from Sweden's National Board of Housing, new home construction will fall dramatically by 44% this year to 33,000. Meanwhile, a drop in construction could further weigh on economic activity, the report warned. The Swedish government announced at the end of 2022 that the country was entering a recession that would last until 2025. The nation's GDP is expected to fall by 0.7%, while unemployment is forecast to rise to 7.8% in 2023 and 8.2% in 2024.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. I am Asma. I have the pleasure to be your host. And here with me, I have two very dear guests, Sister Bita and Brother Muzaffar. Both of you, welcome to Back to Reality.
Assalamu alaikum. My pleasure to be here.
Of course, the pleasure is all in here. Brother Muzaffar, shall we start with you? Please introduce yourself briefly, very much, what you study and...
I'm Muzaffar Haider from the UK. I've studied English literature and now I'm in the Hawza, in the Islamic Seminary.
That's very good. It's a pleasure to have you in here and wish you luck with your studies. You, Sister Bita.
Yes, I'm at your service. I'm Bita and I study medicine at one of the University of Tehran in Iran.
So there's this issue that happens in many places. When you go to a special office, you might see all the people wearing the same thing, like what happens in the hospitals. They all are dressing the same way. And I always wonder, is it a good thing or is it a bad thing?
I think it's absolutely despicable. It is ruining the individuality of the society. Every person is being forced and compelled to fit into a certain box. Everybody's being given a label.
You know, we need it. I think this is necessary for every part of the society. We have to, I don't know, design some rules, some special things, some, I don't know, lines here. And one of them is dress code. We have to have dress code here because, you know, it may look like discipline here, you know, when most of the people wear uniforms, they are equal to each other and they don't actually pay attention to the appearance of the people.
So what this if is I, the point. What, do that if, for what if I don't like to be like others?
So you shouldn't go to a place where it doesn't have dress code. You can change your workplace. You know what?
Oh, really? So what if I have the potential to be a perfect person in there, in that job?
So this is your problem. You know, this is the rule of that of there. You'll have to accept it.
Hang on a second. You're saying that this Einstein, she wants to be a doctor, yeah? But she's not allowed to just because she won't wear a blue overcoat? Or the, one of those lab
answer coats. That.
She can cure cancer, but no, because you don't wear a stethoscope around your neck.
If that goal is that much important, so wearing a blue coat is not that much a pain in the neck.
There you go. You just said it yourself. Useless. We don't need a dress code. We don't need uniform.
We do need it.
Why do we need it?
Can you go with, I don't know, t-shirts to the, I don't know, a kind of...
No, not t-shirt. But for example, I want to work at...
So it means dress code again. You know what? I think the definition of dress code is somehow wrong in our brains. Dress code is a kind of a way of being, not for example, the color. I mean, uniforms and dress code are two different separated things.
Oh, how?
You know, uniforms make all the people equal to each other. They are the same.
All the people of the same place.
Things. The same color, the same design, the same...
So what is dress code?
Dress code is different. Dress code means that there are some some special lines. For example,
kind of social
your
norms.
You have to wear cheddar. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what color is your cheddar.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the difference between dress code and uniform.
So,
but
in order just to digest the difference between dress code and uniforms, let's go for a change of mood and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So, it's dress code, and I didn't know there's a difference between these dress codes that we're talking about.
My own mindset.
No, that's true. It's pretty logical.
For example, when you do a party, you tell them, is it casual wear or is it formal wear?
Exactly. This is, again, dress code.
Yeah, so then for casual.
You know what
I'm sick of seeing? I'm sick of seeing the news, and every single news anchor, male news anchor, is wearing a suit. I'm so bored of seeing it. Why can't they come on the news dressed like a cowboy or like a Jedi Knight outfit? Or why not?
I would still trust him
as much.
This is your mindset.
Right? Why does he have to wear that, though? I don't get it. I would like a difference as well,
you know? There must be a difference in every single person.
Yeah, think about it.
We're supposed to
trust the news, right? So they have to wear formal clothing. So you get all these men anchors, female anchors.
Does it have anything to do with being plausible? I mean, that uniform has got to do something with the audience believing him or her.
Yeah, exactly. It makes you more trustworthy. I'm professional.
Really?
Of course. Yeah, if I was wearing a suit right now, these guys would probably like give me a management position here.
Oh, you know? I never looked at
it
from this perspective.
Yeah, of course. But then, I'd like to point out that the worst of villains and criminals and liars and despots in this world today wear exactly that clothing.
Oh, yeah.
So why are we still trusting it? Why can't news anchors just change their clothes? Why can't they come on there wearing, I don't know,
Just because it's formal. It's the formal way of dressing.
Yeah.
That's it. It's not just to make the audience believe them or whatever. It's just about something being the formal way of dressing.
Who decided it's formal? I want to go dressed as a Viking.
It's a background thing. You know, you cannot change.
Then who drew the borders in
the
countries? Why do we have borders?
Ah, now you're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
It's all about the colonial control thing.
So it's the same thing about that.
So the same thing.
Yeah, you know, there are some
norms. I don't believe in borders.
I don't believe in borders as well.
We don't believe
in it. It's all Earth.
It's easy to say, but yeah, I mean, Allah created it as a sphere for a reason, right?
But, you know, you're going too extreme in that. Even I believe in uniforms here. And I think we need uniforms because...
Uniforms are disgusting.
At a school.
How could you say that?
We need them.
This is the same sister who was an utter dictator when she took control of the world.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Now you're an open book to us right now.
Oh, my gosh.
No, sorry, go on.
Yeah. The thing I'm going to tell you is that we need that because sometimes, for example, even especially in young generation, they pay attention a lot about appearance.
That's true, yeah.
So, because for reducing this pain, a lot of attention to appearance, we have to consider some dress code and some uniforms here.
Because it gets rid of poverty. There's some kids who can't afford
rich
clothes, and then there's some kids.
So, before we get into the core of what you're talking about, let's go for a change of mood, and then we'll be back. So we were talking about uniforms and the so-called dress code and the things like this. And actually, you mentioned a lot of nice stuff. I didn't know that the news speakers are just using those formal dresses to make people believe whatever they say.
Yeah, not just news speakers, but,
So the formal dresses are just for that way.
It's a total psychological game that everybody is playing, you know.
Yeah. So nice. Now, what happens in society if we all are dressed in the same way? And when I say in the very same way, I don't mean that they all dress like the same colors and the yeah. same stuff. I just say have a
the
more
style.
A dress code. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
Like you should wear, for example, as women, you should wear chadors. Or
so easier like that. It's mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, we're not talking about something imaginary.
Yeah.
It is a reality that we are facing in some countries.
I know. Are you for it or against it? Do you think it must be like this or no? Everybody should go for whatever they like.
No, I think it depends on the place you're going to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're going to the street, yeah, there should be some lines.
Some restrictions.
Yeah, some restriction, but not to the that extreme way to, I don't know, tell you to wear these and wear that and wear those and so mm-hmm. on. And it's not like that in any country. I think there is no country in the world that will be like, okay, everyone is the same, mm-hmm. as you told me. It's not like that. We are free.
Yes, all the countries have got their dress codes, their own dress codes, right?
But for yeah. some special places.
For example, in all of the countries, you cannot go to university with whatever dress
exactly.
you want to wear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can't be so easy.
And we need it.
No, I totally disagree. You see, what you have just done is restricted a person's mode of expression, one of the most important modes of expression that we have, which is through the clothing that we wear.
We are not actually limiting it completely from the root at all. You have an area, you can choose in that
exactly.
area. You know, this
see,
is the point.
Let me tell you something. Like, for example, we have a friendly meeting with my friends, with my close friend. So the way I'm going to be dressed up definitely is going to be different from the time I go to visit, I don't know, someone special for an interview, for example.
Yeah. Mm.
So then why? What is it that you don't agree? That there must be a dress code.
Yeah, I'm just against dress code entirely. I think that...
Thank you. Give us reasons, please.
Yeah. Can
we have
us.
A brain.
Because I'm required to play the devil's advocate here. I'm trying really hard, okay?
Here is back to reality.
Yeah.
Don't forget.
No.
Yeah, please. Feel at home.
Okay, fine. How about this? Let me throw this at you. Wherever they have a dress code, you should dress in a way that violates that dress code. Because then you'll change everybody's perspective.
Are you just changing everybody's perspective?
Huh?
Are you just changing other people's perspective, or are you just trying to be a rebel?
No, he's trying to be a rebel. This is clear.
I am a rebel.
Yeah.
Thank you for being proud of being a rebel.
I'm a proud rebel.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We have nothing to do with you.
Honestly, why would people love to be a rebel?
It's a common trend that you see, especially in the Western world, where you see these subgroup cultures. They always want to show how they're different from the rest. And
they
so
want to catch attention.
It's all about attention.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
all about attention. So you have the goth culture. You must have seen them, really black hair and then black eyeshadow, and then they have black fingernails,
and then they have these punk black...
Yes, yes.
You have the grunger crowd,
yeah,
and they
exactly.
they have like collars
gothic
with
grunge.
Spikes on them, mm. and then you have the gangsters, the hip hop. They have the hoodies,
yes, yes.
and you know they yo
the rappers,
yo and all
yeah.
that. And then you have all these groups, and then you have the hipsters. Apparently, I dress like a hipster. I'm not doing it intentionally, if that's the case. But all of these groups, they're actually part of groups.
Yeah.
But they think they're rebelling against society when they're not, because they've just become part of another group. Ta-da!
Yeah.
Bravo!
Nice.
Well done.
Yeah, that's
you've done nothing.
It was a kind of meaningless cycle.
Yeah.
Right? Because even if you want to violate towards the dress code, there is a group that accepts your dress code, you know? I mean, when you're wearing a special style, you are having a dress code for yourself.
Mm.
So...
And
dress
it's unbelievable,
is
you know,
seen.
In social media, sometimes I see some special yeah. dresses that I can't believe there's a single person in this world who can wear this cloth. But they wear it.
Yeah. yeah.
And it's unbelievable. And then they call it, this is being artistic.
yeah.
And I see
Have you
no
seen the fashion shows?
Yeah.
They had this one where it was literally just a bubble, like a big plastic bubble.
Yeah,
That was not artistic.
How come this is artistic? And the more I gaze at it, I want
Maybe
to see the art
artists.
Yeah,
in some corners
not,
of it, but I don't see art anywhere.
No. They also introduced bags which look like purses for men.
Oh, yeah.
And skirts for men. Oh, man,
yeah,
it's just wrong.
It's so disgusting.
And yes, we actually don't have an absolute definition for art, for anything, I guess, in nowadays life, because everybody has got a right to speak up and everybody has got a right to say something. So maybe even those sometimes. Bubbles are a sort of fashion. Who knows? Maybe to some people that's art.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, perspectives are different.
Yeah, different sort of horizons.
This is the beauty of life.
This is the beauty, but I guess this postmodern age has got less beauties than the other ages.
Yeah. The emptiness is somehow
and it's
so
my empty. Perspective, my personal perspective that you know I should have the right to pop that bubble.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So yeah, the rights have got different definition as well. So that's the perspective. It's all about perspectives. Yeah, that was all the time that we had for today's episode. Until another episode, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي let the ummah rise again let us see daylight again once again
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Nikki Haley, the newly minted Republican presidential candidate, called on Wednesday, 15th of February, for mandatory mental competency tests for politicians older than 75, an implied dig at President Joe Biden and her one-time boss, former President Donald Trump. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The U.S. newspaper The Hill has covered this story and tells us more. Nikki Haley, the newly minted Republican presidential candidate, has called for mandatory mental competency tests for politicians older than 75. Speaking at a rally in Charleston, South Carolina, kicking off her 2024 White House bid, Nikki Haley ran through a litany of political promises, including enacting term limits for members of Congress and cracking down on illegal immigration. But it was a vow to impose mandatory cognitive tests on older office holders that underscored the central message of her campaign, that the United States needs a younger leader after previously electing two of the oldest men to ever occupy the White House. In the America I see, the permanent politician will finally retire, Nikki Haley said. We'll have term limits for Congress and mandatory mental competency tests for politicians over the age of 75. Her remarks reflect a growing sentiment within both parties that their standard bearers, Joe Biden in the Democrats' case and Donald Trump for Republicans, are simply too old to continue on in the White House. Trump would be 78 by the time he'd be hypothetically sworn in again as president, while Joe Biden would be 82. Republicans in particular have repeatedly questioned Joe Biden's cognitive state, seizing on a series of gaffes to argue that he's not mentally fit to serve in the White House. Nikki Haley announced her campaign on Tuesday in a video posted online, becoming the first major Republican to mount a challenge to Donald Trump. Trump, who is once again seeking the GOP presidential nod. She's expected to travel to Iowa and New Hampshire, the first two states to hold Republican nominating contests later on this week. While Nikki Haley may be one of the first 2024 candidates out of the gate, she still faces a rocky path to securing her party's nomination. For the time being, Donald Trump remains the GOP contest's ostensible front-runner, while Florida Governor Ron DeSantis appears to be the most viable alternative. Nikki Haley's support, meanwhile, is mired in the single digits. Haley has labelled herself a next-generation candidate in making her opening pitch for her 2024 presidential bid. She's also insisting that anyone over the age of 75 should be subjected to a mental competency test. It is a jab at President Biden, who will turn 81 in November, and Nikki Haley's 76-year-old rival for the Republican nomination, former President Donald Trump. The White House and Joe Biden allies say they understand that age and the president's mental competency will be at the epicenter of Republican attacks, and they're prepared to handle it. On Thursday, 16th of February, in a feisty response, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre offered a preview of how Team Biden will handle the attacks, pointing to 2021 when he proved his critics wrong and turned around the economy, and in 2022 when everyone predicted another red wave. Joe Biden, Karine Jean-Pierre said, beat them at their own game. British news of the Daily Mail has also covered this story and tells us more. Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley on Thursday defended her demand that politicians older than 75 who are past their prime get mental competency tests. When people send someone to Washington, they need to know they're at the top of their game. That's why I think those competency tests are important, she argued on Fox and Friends. Nikki Haley added, we can't have someone like Joe Biden who's asleep at the wheel and have China sitting there threatening us and us wondering if he actually knows what's going on. Haley made the pitch for competency tests in a 2024 campaign kickoff speech on Wednesday, 15th of February, in Charleston, South Carolina. The plan seemed to be aimed at both Biden, an 80-year-old, and former President Donald Trump, a 76-year-old, who until Haley jumped in Tuesday was the only Republican who had announced the 2024 presidential bid. Asked by Fox and Friends' Brian Kilmeade how Haley thought Donald Trump would do in such a test, his former ambassador to the United Nations said she believed the ex-president would pass the test. You know, I think he did great the last time he did it. I have no reason to think he wouldn't do well this time, Haley answered. But do I think we need it? She added that mental competency tests shouldn't just be given to presidents, but to aging members of Congress as well. Donald Trump famously boasted in July of 2020 that he asked his doctor to allow him to take a cognitive test to shut these people up, referring to those critiquing his mental fitness to hold office. It was 30 or 35 questions. The first questions are very easy. The last questions are much more difficult, like a memory question, Trump said in an interview with Fox News Channel. It's like you'll go person, woman, man, camera, TV. So they say, could you repeat that, please? And I said, yeah, it's person, woman, man, camera, TV. Okay, that's very good. If you get it in order, you get extra points, Trump explained. The former president then said that 10 minutes later he was asked to repeat the same words in order again and did so successfully. Can you do it? And you go, Person, woman, man, camera, TV, Trump said. They say, that's amazing. How did you do that? I do it because I have good memory, because I'm cognitively there, he said. The clip went viral and was used for fodder by comedians in the United States. Joe Biden, meanwhile, was at the Walter Reed Medical Center on Thursday for his annual physical check, which was delayed by several months. When he previously received a physical check, his doctor made no mention of any kind of cognitive exam. During her kickoff speech on Wednesday, 15th of February, Nikki Haley argued, "It's not that America is past its prime, it's just that our politicians are past their prime. We won't win the fight for the 21st century if we keep trusting politicians from the 20th century," she added. 2 days into her presidential run, and Nikki Haley's main selling point has been that she, at the age of 51, represents a generational change.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very interesting and beautiful hadith. And this hadith is very pertinent for us today, just as it was pertinent in the time in which it was uttered by the imam. This hadith is about the attribution of creation to nature. You know, this is a belief that actually it's been present from times, even from the time of the Prophet. We see it reflected in a verse of the Holy Quran. In a verse of the Holy Quran, God, he relates from the disbelievers that they say, "In hiya illa hayatuna dunya, namutu wa nahya wa ma yuhlikuna illa dahr." This is a very famous verse. It's God quotes them as saying that there is nothing but the life of this world. We live and we die, and nothing destroys us but time, right? So there's this is kind of this belief or this kind of idea that, you know, things are created through a natural process in which matter, you know, it evolves and transforms. And the different phenomenon that we see in this world is just the natural result of the process of the transformation of matter. There's no conscious creator behind this process that, you know, kind of propels it and pushes it forward in a certain direction, you know, or purpose. So this was present beforehand. It's reflected a lot of times by, you know, many scientists, especially physicists. You know, some of these physicists today, a famous example is Stephen Hawking, right, the famous physicist who is also an atheist. And so this is present in today as it was present yesterday. And, you know, in this beautiful hadith, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam was asked by one of his companions, Al-Mufaddal, who said, "Oh my master, there is a group of people that claim that this creation is the doing of nature itself." The Imam alayhi salam asked them about, the Imam alayhi salam said, "Ask them about this nature. Does it have knowledge and power to carry out such actions as creation or not? For if they answer that it has knowledge and power, then what is preventing them from acknowledging the existence of a creator? For verily, this is his creation if they claim that nature does these actions without knowledge or without purpose. While having witnessed the exactness and wisdom therein, it is obviously known that this is the work of a very wise creator, and what they have called nature is the very system running through creation." Right? So basically in this hadith, as you can see, right, the Imam questions, you know, this belief by, you know, asking whether this nature, which, you know, performs, which they claim is the source of these phenomena that we see, if it is conscious or not. If they claim that it is not without consciousness and knowledge, then how this doesn't tie up with the, you know, the meticulousness and the order that we see in the universe. Otherwise, if they do admit to it, then, you know, in fact, what they are admitting to is, you know, is a wise creator, which we believe in. Perhaps the details between that they believe in are differ from the details and the particulars of our belief, but nevertheless, we have come to an agreement with them regarding this. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the attribution of creation to nature in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me